Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning in to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. So next week, our friends at Circle of Care will be hosting the only statewide walk and 5K run supporting all Connecticut families of kids with cancer. So tune in and learn about their mission and how you can support this unique nonprofit with a powerful show of unity during Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Then we're going to help you take full advantage of all that Connecticut offers to autumn leaf peepers, hikers, and campers as we explore opportunities to get out and enjoy the glory of the season with guests from the Connecticut Forest and Park Association. And we're going to wrap up going from the forest to the garden and clue you in on how to become one of the growing number of Connecticut Master Gardeners with the acting director of the UConn Extension Master Gardeners Program, a dynamic educational outreach initiative that blends horticulture science with community engagement. But first, if you ever wanted to invest in green jobs, CGB Green Liberty Notes LLC, a subsidiary of the Connecticut Green Bank, has announced the launch of its 14th award-winning offering. Green Liberty Notes, offered quarterly, can be purchased with a low minimum investment of just $100 through Green Bank's partnership with Honeycomb Credit, utilizing their online crowdfunding website. Investments in this offering support Eversource's Small Business Energy Advantage program, which enables small businesses in Connecticut to lower their energy expenses through efficiency enhancements and interest-free loans. For more information or to invest, please visit greenlibertynotes.com. All right. Well, as we mentioned in our introduction, we are very pleased to be back in touch with Liz Salguero. She is the co-founder and co-executive director of Circle of Care for families of children with cancer. And she's been a fairly regular friend and partner with us here for the people. We try to catch up with her once or twice a year for this important statewide organization and all the great work that you and your growing team of board members and volunteers and supporters do, Liz. Great to talk to you this morning. Thanks for joining.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to talk to you again, John.
So let's briefly take it back, not to drag you through the story over and over every time we talk, but while I'm not meeting you for the first time, there's probably thousands of people that are, thanks to you coming on the program. So let's go back to the beginning and the inspiration for this organization that has done so much for families of children facing cancer diagnoses.
It was, over 20 years ago that my son, Carlos, was diagnosed with leukemia at age 2.5. We spent nearly 3 years with him in treatment, and he is now 26 years old and thriving. But during that time, we met a lot of other families who were also going through this pediatric cancer journey, and there was really very little support for us. So we decided that what we really wanted to do was kind of give back and create a network of support that would help the next round of families that were going to find themselves in this same situation. Because pediatric cancer is not preventable. It's an accident. It's not supposed to happen to children. It's just something that does to about 200 children in Connecticut every year. Thankfully, the cure rates are really improving. They're up around 85% now. But there's always going to be new diagnoses. So how could we help the families that were going to be coming behind us? And so that's why we started Circle of Care back in 2003.
And aside from all of the incredible things that you've been able to achieve with you and your family, volunteers and partners, it really is having someone to talk to in those darkest hours that can offer empathy and a shared experience, right?
Yes. Pediatric cancer is a very, very isolating diagnosis. Chances are you don't know anybody else who's had a child with cancer, unlike when it happens to an adult. And it's really important to have somebody to reach out to who kind of gets where you are and can help you as a young family navigate this long treatment protocol. What do you do to care for your sick child? How do you care for your siblings? What do you do about work and not being able to go back to work for a few months or maybe a year because of the intensity of your child's treatment? It really helps to have another person who's a peer to help guide you. And that's really where we started. And then over the course of the first few years, we developed about five other programs that are designed to meet the changing needs during these long protocols. Because what you need that first month or 6 months when there's all this fear and uncertainty and shock and you just don't know or understand anything about this new hospital system that you're now becoming a part of is very different than once you've been doing this for a year and a half. So our programs really meet those changing needs of the children and their families.
The other thing that I'd like to really recognize and highlight is the fact that your organization is very astute at recognizing the way that the network around a child with cancer acts and feels, and you have uniquely different means of supporting and communicating with parents and grandparents versus the young siblings and even maybe the young relatives and friends of these children. Because as someone who experienced, aside from a grandparent, the very first death ever in my life was from a childhood cancer situation with a family friend. And I remember then I was probably like 9 or 10 years old, and it was really, really confusing and scary. And to be able to have the expertise to offer a young child some sort of support to help them get through it, I think is so critical.
Well, cancer doesn't just happen to the patient. Mm. It affects the whole family. And we felt that firsthand. So we really work hard to be able to be there to support the immediate family, their friends, all of the caregivers that are a part of a child's journey.
Mm. So you've got big news coming up. We did mention in the introduction that virtually days away is going to be essentially your biggest and hopefully your best and most successful kind of public facing event. So I'll leave it up to you to extend this invitation to everyone who's listening to come on out to Sherwood Island.
Well, September is Childhood Cancer Awareness Month, in case you didn't know that. And it is a month in which we honor the children, not only in our circle, but all the children who have been in treatment, are continuing to be in treatment, and those who, unfortunately, we may have lost in the last year or two. It's really important for everybody to understand that a childhood cancer diagnosis affects, as we said before, not just the child, but the whole family. And we as a community need to come together to raise them up, to support them, to encourage them. So this September, along with a lot of other events that we've had going on, we are capping off the month with our 11th annual walk run. And for the first time, it's going to be held at Sherwood Island State Park in Westport. We have done this for the past 10 years at Merwin Meadows in Wilton, but we literally have outgrown the space. We had over 400 participants last year, and it's just not enough room for us. Mm-hmm. So we're super excited to be moving this event to Sherwood Island, and we've expanded it because we have more space. So not only will we have a timed 5K and a run and a walk, but we will have 15 different wellness partners who will be there offering massages and stretching and cool down yoga, as well as power bars and green smoothies, all the things that our athletes and walkers will want to partake in. We've also partnered with Inspira Marketing, a company in Norwalk run by a cancer dad. Our kids were in treatment together. They're an event marketing company, and they have created this amazing superhero adventure obstacle course for us. So there's going to be a lot of different activities taking place that morning. So it's going to be just a really fun community morning to show your support for kids in treatment, kids who've gone through treatment, and their families and friends.
Any chance our Make Tracks champion Bryson will be there to add a little celebrity to the event?
100% Bryson will be there with his mom, Mahogany. He just finished treatment about 6 months ago, and he's kind of getting back to life. He himself is a very athletic kid, or was, and is now becoming again, and he's looking forward to running the 5K himself. We will all be there to cheer him on.
And not to get too deep into it, but the challenges that Mahogany faced is really another one of the reasons why you guys are there.
Well, yes, her story is unique because it is her story, but it is also not uncommon. You know, she's a single mom caring for a very sick child, and it's very difficult to manage work and caring for a sick child and siblings. And so we were there to help her financially as well as emotionally, as well as practically, with kind of advice and tips for how to get through his very long and arduous treatment.
Very good. Switching gears a little bit to talk more about the team and the folks who you support. I understand that you had some representatives from Circle of Care traveling down to Washington back in the late summer.
So we had so much fun this summer. So our adolescent and young adult program, which is geared towards the kids who are 15 to 26 within our circle, is really special. These are kids who, you can understand, are too old for the pediatric cancer activities of Candyland and Legos,
sure,
and also way too young to be in an adult cancer environment. So we've created a program that helps them to find their own community within each other, within Circle of Care. And one of the things that we did this year was we took four of our AYAs, we call them, to this phenomenal conference in DC called CancerCon. And it is just for this AYA community. So we were down in DC for 4 days at CancerCon, where there are workshops, four different workshops every day, and fun parties at night, and ways for these kids to make community and make friends and just be themselves. We just had dinner with this group this week to kind of talk about how the experience was and how they're feeling now a month after we got back. And they were talking about how it was so great to be with their cancer normies, just to be with people who get them. And it was a really powerful experience and super fun.
Yeah. Kind of like I mentioned earlier with the support for kids, that peer on peer, experience, there's nothing like it.
No, there really isn't.
So, what we want to talk about next is this, partnership that you guys have with the Northwestern Mutual Tri-Harbor Financial Group. You were honoring a couple of very special supporters recently.
Yeah, so Northwestern Mutual Tri-Harbor Financial Group has been a huge support to Circle of Care for, I don't think, 15 years at this point. Matt Russo and his wife, Tanya, really believe in the mission of supporting families through childhood cancer, and it is something that nobody should ever have to go through. They are our champion supporter at our Make Tracks event on Sunday, and will be there to honor Bryson next weekend. But we really are so grateful for the kind of long-term commitment that companies and individuals have made to us, so that we are still here 22 years later. Our newest partner is ASML, and they are the presenting sponsor at Make Tracks, and this will be the third year that they have been supporting Circle of Care. They're our neighbor here in Wilton, across the street from us. And again, it's another example of corporations giving back to their communities in a significant way.
taking the combination of the angels in the corporate community and the individual angels who step up and do things like volunteering or even just showing up for this event coming up on the 28th, support now is more important than ever with all the competition for funding for the nonprofits, many of whom are losing funding. Meeting families' essential needs is still critically important, but those essential needs, as we even heard as recently as last week's show with our friends from United Way of Connecticut, critical needs in Connecticut, 4 out of every 10 families can barely or can't afford them. And certainly you're experiencing that escalation in the cost for support as well.
Absolutely. It's really kind of frightening times right now because we have families who are living on the edge when they get this diagnosis. And we have families who think that they're in really good financial shape when they get this diagnosis, only to find out that if you have to stop working for 6 months or a year and you lose 50% of your income and your deductibles are $9,000 or $10,000 and your ongoing copays, you can be out of pocket $15,000 or $20,000 in the first 6 months of a child's diagnosis. I don't know who can afford that. So that's why our financial assistance program is so critical, because we cover basic needs so that families do not have to make the choices between going to treatment or putting food on the table. That's just not okay with us. We were able to provide over $500,000 in direct financial assistance last year for food, gas, transportation, rent, utilities, cell phone bills. You have to be able to stay in touch with your families and friends when you are in and out of the hospital with a sick child. The cuts that are going on now are frightening. We don't really know how it's going to affect the entire community. We thankfully have never relied on federal or state funding, but we know that the private donors who give to us, their dollars are going to have to go farther because they are also supporting other organizations that did rely on federal and state funding. Mm-hmm. We're already beginning to see this, because just yesterday we had kind of a panicked call from a mom whose child is in treatment for a relapse. We have been supporting this family for 4 years, and she called us yesterday to say that her SNAP benefits just got cut. Mm. So how is she supposed to feed her 3 children? It is frightening times, but we are more committed than ever to be here to help this vulnerable population of children, adolescents, and young adults with cancer here in our community in Connecticut.
And that's just one point of evidence on why it's so important for as many people as possible to make tracks to Sherwood Island State Park on September 28th. Check-in is at 8, start time is at 9, but getting registered is most critical. Elizabeth, are you going to be offering a walk-up registration that day, or do folks need to really get on board virtually as soon as the program is over this morning?
We will not turn anybody away, John, but I will say that if you do show up and you haven't registered yet, we will help you to register on your phone. But really, registering in advance makes the whole process so much smoother that morning, because then you're just checking in, getting your T-shirt, getting your bib if you're walking or running, and then being able to immediately take part in all of the other fun activities that we have that morning. So I highly recommend registering in advance.
And people can do that as easily as going to thecircleofcare.org. You can't miss it. The Make Tracks registration information is right up loud and long at the top. You can even still register to volunteer, right?
Oh, yes, absolutely. This event takes like an army. We will need probably over 60 volunteers that day.
And as folks are hearing, the need is greater than ever, and new emergencies are facing families with children facing cancer every day. So if you can't make the race, consider the registration fee and maybe even consider doubling it, because they'll make it easy for you to donate. That button is also right at the top of the website, thecircleofcare.org. Their co-director and co-founder, Elizabeth Salguero, kind enough to spend some time with us this morning, getting everyone ready for this event here during Childhood Cancer Awareness Month. Elizabeth, great to talk to you again, and thank you so much for your time and all the work that you guys are doing for these families here in Connecticut.
Thank you, John, and thank you so much for helping to spread awareness of childhood cancer and the resources here in Connecticut that are available through Circle of Care for these families.
All right. Well, as we keep hearing and seeing in the media here in New England, autumn is nearly upon us. And that means all the glory that fall has to offer for you, whether you're a casual leaf peeper or an avid hiker or a camper or someone who just likes to get in the car and go for a lovely drive to somewhere where they can sit and just enjoy the peace and quiet and the beauty of autumn here in Connecticut. And we have no better guide to help us do that than Megan Strange. She's with the Connecticut Forest and Park Association. They were founded not too long ago, back in 1895. They were the first private nonprofit conservation organization to be established in Connecticut. And we're going to be talking to you all about it, giving you some important points that you need to know. But the first one we're going to give you, I'm sure Megan and the Forest and Park Association colleagues share, but this is from our guest last week, Katie Dykes at the Connecticut DEEP. She wants you to know Connecticut experienced record wildfire activity in 2024 with 605 fires burning more than 500 acres, destroying 8 structures and disrupting communities across the state. The Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection, DEEP, wants you, whether you're a resident or visitor, to be aware that seasonal dry weather and windy conditions in combination with fallen leaves and increased sunlight reaching and warming forest floors can elevate the likelihood of wildfire. By being aware and taking appropriate precautions, everyone can play a valuable role in protecting our families, neighbors, and communities. And if you'd like more information, you can just consult the venerable Smokey the Bear. You go to smokeybear.com to learn everything that you need to know about helping to prevent forest fires and wildfires. All right, Megan, good morning. Thanks for joining us. I'm sure you and your team are also very much fire aware at this time of year.
Yeah. I mean, we've had a very dry summer, and we're starting to head into a dry fall. So we really just want everyone to be safe out there and practice the best practices so that everyone can be aware and have a great fall this year.
Excellent. So let's talk a little bit about the Forest and Park Association. And before we dig any deeper than the introduction I just read, what brought you to the organization? Do you have a passion for environmental protection and promotion?
I would say a little bit. You know, it's interesting whenever I talk about what led me to the organization, because in some ways I do feel like I fell into this. So I had just graduated college and was a little bit lost, you know, trying to figure out where do I want to go in my life? What do I want to do? And it just happened that one day I was looking outside the window and I was thinking about the trees that were out there and the plants and thought, hey, I think I want to be in the outdoors. I think I want to help nature. You know, there's so many things that are threatening our ecosystems right now that even as someone who didn't go to school for this and just has a passing passion for it, you know, the idea of being able to help that really thrilled me. And that's kind of led me on my path to the Connecticut Forest and Park Association to where I am now. Helping my colleagues really elevate their work and get our mission out there and hopefully get people excited about what we're doing so they can join us on this journey.
Well, the CFP certainly has a long tenure of environmental stewardship and mm-hmm. Promotion of our open spaces here in Connecticut. Beyond that initial introduction, tell me a little bit more about the association and what are some of the more important things that people need to know about the structure and the organization, at least so far, before we get into talking about some other unique and important points.
Yeah, so the Connecticut Forested Park Association, or CFPA, is a nonprofit dedicated to conserving Connecticut for today and tomorrow. Our mission is to connect people to our forests, parks, and blue blaze hiking trails so that they can be conserved and well-managed for future generations. You talked a little bit about the history of the organization, and here's a little known fact that may not be known by everyone, is that when the organization first founded, you know, our state was only about 20% forested. So, you know, the forest you see outside your window in like a 15 or 30 minute drive simply weren't there a little over 100 years ago. That was a lot of agriculture and pasture land. So the organization has been really dedicated to fostering healthy forests and fostering that connection, getting people to feel something about the nature we sometimes take for granted, to build it back up. And thankfully, we are now up to 60% forested in the state, thanks to the efforts of the organization and many different partners in the state working to bring those forests back. In addition to that, we also conserve land. So we're a land trust with over 2,000 acres under our name. We advocate at the state level for conservation priorities and have helped create the Passport to the Parks program, as well as assisted with the establishment of over 100 state parks in Connecticut. In addition to that, we have our trails. We have over 825 miles of blue blaze hiking trails across Connecticut, which are great opportunities for people to get outside and get connected into nature. And then we also have a robust education program delivering forest-based environmental education to adults, students, teachers, and the community.
All good reasons why folks should go to ctwoodlands.org and consider becoming a member of the Connecticut Forest and Park Association right now. As you're hearing, a lot of great work that that organization is doing, and you can be part of an over a century old initiative here in Connecticut to make things even better in our environment. So, Megan, you know, when folks are going out to enjoy the beauty of autumn, too often I think that they are just doing a lot of looking up when, as you pointed out in some of your interview notes, they should also spend a little while looking down, because aside from the leaves changing colors, there's a lot of other really cool and interesting things that happen in the autumn here in New England from an environmental standpoint.
Yeah, I feel like fall is such an exciting time for our ecosystem, because you're seeing a drastic change from the summer as the, you know, plants, the animals, and the bugs begin prepping for the winter months ahead. So it's a great time to slow down, take a look at your surroundings, and notice what is changing from the summer season. So you'll find acorns beginning to drop. You'll find mushrooms starting to pop up. Like I said, animals and plants are prepping for winter. That's why those leaves are changing color and dropping. And in addition to that, if you like birds at all, it's a great migration time. So we're seeing birds coming in from the north, heading down south for the winter, and you can see who's coming through and who's staying. And it's just an amazing time to slow down and see what's happening.
And aside from slowing down, I guess it's also a time for folks who get a little bit competitive, because a big part of what juices them up is hiking. I see here that there is something going on with the Blue Blazed Hiking Trails called the New England Trail Hike Challenges. What's that about?
Yeah, so we have two challenges, the Blue Blaze Hiking Trails Challenge and the New England Hike Challenge. They're great ways to get outside this fall for anyone who's looking for a little extra motivation, maybe a little excuse to explore a new area of the state. They are challenges that allow people to sign up. You can pick a few different hikes to go on, and you record those miles. For the Blue Blaze Hiking Trails Challenge, you can get a prize at different mileage points. So 50, 200, 400, 800, you can get anywhere between a patch and a 800-mile hiking vest. That's a pretty fun exclusive club. And then the New England Hiking Trail Challenge, that one is specific to the National New England Scenic Trail that passes through Connecticut here and goes up into Massachusetts and a little bit beyond. And you, hikers can go out there, hike, I believe, up to 50 miles and also get a patch. So great ways to get outside and also a great time to, you know, grab a buddy, take on this challenge together, and explore new places you haven't been before.
So maybe now is the perfect time to stop pushing and prodding people to get out so quickly, because we need them to be thinking about safety when they're out. We've already mentioned the fire dangers that are potentially escalating as we're now in a kind of halfway through a period of dry patch weather-wise. But also, you know, while Mother Nature is putting on her colorful glory, hikers should not seek to downplay the safety of being colorful themselves, right?
Mm-hmm, exactly. Yeah, so with the fall season comes hunting season. We want everyone to be safe out there. You know, hiking and getting outdoors does not come without its risks. So we want people to be aware of what is going on the trails and in the forest. Hunting is allowed in some state parks and forests, and you can always check out more information about the different hunting seasons and what's happening when you're planning to go out at CT Deep, DEEP, for more resources on that. Mm-hmm. In addition to that, it's really important right now to make sure you're planning ahead and being prepared when you go out for these adventures. So you know your route you're taking, you're checking the weather because things are getting cool. So you want to make sure you're bringing layers, have water, maybe a little bit snack for yourself, and make sure you're tailoring your preparedness for that type of hike you're taking. So if it's a little bit of a quick hike after work, maybe you don't need to bring as much. But if you're planning a full day adventure, you want to make sure you're as prepared as possible. So if anything comes up, you can tackle those head on and have a great experience overall. In addition to that, you know, the trails give us a unique opportunity to really immerse in nature, but we also need to remember that we are entering places that are the homes of wildlife and plants. So we strongly recommend everyone to follow the leave no trace practices, and that's what we practice ourselves. So some of those principles are, you know, carrying out what you carry in, leave what you find in the woods, staying on the trail so you can lessen that impact in the environment, and also just respect others and the wildlife you may run into. You know, we're coming into their homes and experiencing what is the reality, and you are going to be running into community members who are also looking to get outside and have a great time. And then a last little just tip and safety reminder when it comes to getting out this fall is, you know, it can get pretty busy out there, and parking can be a little bit tough. If possible, you know, I always recommend that people carpool. It's a great way to, you know, get an excuse to get everyone together for a fun car ride as you go on an adventure. But it's also great for the environment. It also saves space in those parking lots, which can sometimes be small. And then if you come to a parking lot that may be full or maybe isn't great to park in, you check out other parking lots that may be nearby. On our website at ctwoodlands.org, we have an interactive trail map that's great for picking out your adventure. And on there, we also have, you know, some information about parking nearby. So, you know, have a couple of those possible parking places available in your back pocket just in case, you know, a spot's not open for you so you don't have to turn around and go home.
Perfect. Finally, it's all about stewardship with the Connecticut Forest and Park Association. It all starts with those who take care of many of the locations and trails that you've been talking about. That's where the Master Woodland Manager Program comes in. We've got about 3 or 4 minutes left. Let's put the focus on recruiting people during this anniversary year.
Yeah, so it's a really exciting year. As you mentioned, it's an anniversary year. We just welcomed our fifth class for our fifth anniversary, and it's the largest class we've had yet. We accepted about 75 students, and 65 have enrolled. So that is one group that is getting outside this fall. They're doing what our education director likes to call a choose-your-own education adventure plan through a mix of virtual and field learning. I believe there's a little bit over 170 programs that they can spend the next year choosing to learn from to learn all about forest management. So as you said, we're all about stewardship, and just to bring it back to that 60% that is forested in the state now, actually 70% is privately owned. So that could be individuals like you and I who may own a property or live on a condo area that may have an acre of land. That's land trust, that's municipal property. Getting these people who have acres of forest out there to learn more about how to manage them, especially how to manage them for wildlife, for economic changes, or for economic reasons, or for climate changes, is really going to help create these forest corridors that, you know, have been kind of fragmented over time by development, so that there's great places for wildlife to exist. We create more places for people to coexist with nature, and will help steward these places, hopefully for future generations. An amazing stat that I'll never not be amazed by is the fact that since the program started, we now have over 169 master woodland managers who are out there managing their land or the land on behalf of someone for these sound decisions that they're making. And they're actually managing over 75,000 acres wow. of land here in Connecticut and a little bit beyond. So the amazing impact of that program is going to have a huge beneficial impact for the future of the forest in our state. And if anyone ever wants to learn more about the program or even join the program as a Master Woodland Manager, you can go to our website at ctwoodlands.org/master/MWM to learn more about the Master Woodland Manager program and apply for next year's cohort.
And ultimately, folks can also be very, very helpful with even a small nominal donation straight to the association, right?
Yeah, of course. You know, we wouldn't be able to do what we do without the community support of our members, our donors, and also our volunteers who really step up and help fulfill our mission and get it out there. So folks can join and become a member at any level and make that impact to support our programs and our work. You can also join us as a volunteer and get out on trails doing trail maintenance, becoming an education volunteer to help with programming, or even just helping out in the office. You know, we love to have people come in and help. And really right now, with the federal funding uncertainties that face in the next couple years ahead, it's going to take everyone, you know, taking a step forward to use their power and use their voice, use their resources to step up for the outdoors so that they can remain supported through whatever life throws at them.
The website is ctwoodlands.org, and for the entire 130 plus years, this organization has been working as stewards of Connecticut's growing network of forests and trails. The Connecticut Forest and Park Association was the first private nonprofit conservation organization to be established in Connecticut. They're worthy representative today for our program is Megan Strange. We really appreciate the conversation and all of the tips and advice, Megan. CTWoodlands.org is a place to go to donate, to learn more, check out that interactive trail map, and get out there and enjoy all the beauty that Connecticut has to offer this autumn and beyond. Megan, thank you so much. All right. Well, interesting coincidence that our first guest on the program was Elizabeth, and we're ending the program with another Elizabeth. So pleased to have Elizabeth Adler on the program representing UConn Extension's Master Gardeners Program. She's the Hartford County Coordinator for the Master Gardeners Program, and we are going to be reminding you of an imminent date coming up, October 17th, which is the deadline for applications for the 2026 Master Gardener Program, and we're going to be telling you why this program is so critically important and why you should be part of it, no matter what your interest in gardening is, because once you're done with this program, folks will be flocking to you for resources, and we hope you'll consider being part of it. We also want to remind you that the Fairfield University's School of Education and Human Development is hosting a free panel discussion about something that is probably impacting all of us these days, even by the hour. The program's called Anxious America, Mental Health and Healing in the Era of Anxiety. It's coming up next Monday, September 29th from 6 to 8 p.m. at the Dolan School of Business Event Hall. This event is going to bring together cross-disciplinary experts to examine the impact of anxiety and explore how educators, healthcare and mental health clinicians, families, spiritual advisors, and community partners can respond with empathy, strategy, and systems of care. If you'd like to go, it's free. You just need to register at events.fairfield.edu. Or just get out in the garden, right, Elizabeth? That'll cut the anxiety factor down, right?
That's one of the best part of it. Absolutely will. Yes, being out in the garden is a wonderful way of relaxing.
And I have to assume that you've been getting your hands dirty for quite some time. I bet you're an avid gardener.
Yes, although I had to take a break from gardening for many years, but I grew up in an amazing garden that had been in a house that had been owned in the early part of the 20th century by a horticulturalist who had worked at the Brooklyn Botanic Garden. And wow, it had all sorts of really wonderful and amazing plants, unusual plants, rare plants. And I think that was probably where I learned my love of gardening. But I didn't garden for many years, and it's only within the last 5 or 6 years that I've had my own garden to work on.
Mm. Well, in terms of your involvement with the Master Gardeners Program, you've advanced into management.
I guess so. I'm a coordinator.
Let's hear about your exposure to the Master Gardeners Program and a little bit about your experience with it as you became trained to step up to this level of expertise.
So I took the Master Gardener Program in 2003 because I was interested in learning more about gardening. As I said, now that I had my own garden to work on, I wanted to get more knowledge other than my basic familiarity with a lot of plants. And I took the course in 2003. It had both a classroom portion and a volunteer outreach portion. And there's extensive horticultural training about all sorts of things. So not only about plants, but we learn about soil and water and entomology and so forth. And then you get to put much of your learning in practice during the internship as you share things with the community. So I did that, and it was a lot of fun. I learned a tremendous amount, and I did enjoy the community outreach portion a lot. And when a position opened up a couple of years later, I applied for it and became the coordinator for Harford County.
That's great. So the thing that's incredible about this program is that it not only pays dividends to each master gardener who comes from it, those dividends ripple effect out into the communities where they live and work and where they participate in sharing their passion and their skills.
Absolutely. Educational outreach is a huge component of the Master Gardener program, as it is for all elements of extension. So it's intended to be service-oriented, and Master Gardeners work to bring information about gardening and horticulture and the environment to the community where they live. So people can volunteer at community gardens or garden clubs or publicly accessible parks.
Traffic islands, right?
Side of the road. So it's very much intended to be involved in the community rather than just, in fact, that's an essential component of it is agreeing to do volunteer work as a way of paying back for the education that you received. You share it in the community. You do that through two mechanisms. There are outreach projects where you can give talks or work in the community, and there are office hours where you answer questions that come into the office.
Mm. Well, I don't know how many colleagues and constituents that you have worked with who have gotten into supporting some sort of municipal effort that has really, for lack of a better term, blossomed into something really incredible in the towns and cities across Harford County. But once in a while, folks get into really major, high-profile and far-reaching support projects that really beautify areas of the community that have a sustaining beauty due to their involvement.
Yes, that's true. So we have in Harford County, some of our projects involve working at Elizabeth Park, at the Mark Twain House, at the Stowe Center. Master Gardeners have been involved in creating a pollinator garden at the Hillstead Museum. In addition, there have been a lot of involvement on dealing with invasives and increasing pollinators in various areas. So we have the Peace Pole Pollinator Pathway, which is a native flower garden effort in Canton. And there is the Collinsville Pollen Trail that started out as a way of tackling Japanese knotweed, which is an invasive and is really turning into this amazing resource for pollinators and for humans. And also we work on food shares. There's the Enfield Common Grounds Rotary Garden, which was started about 10 years ago, which provides harvest for Enfield Food Shelf. So there are all sorts of projects that we're involved on that provide service to the community, both beauty and food.
Yeah. Well, for folks who are listening that might want to experience this depth of education and greater opportunity to apply it to giving back in their community or in a location that is seen by many folks from many communities, they need to get involved with the program. It starts in January, but the deadline to register is looming. It's coming up up on Friday, October 17th. So folks need to get their applications in. If they're hearing something that's inspiring them to consider applying, could you run down the bullet points of some of the most important things they need to know about the commitment and how the actual training curriculum works?
Sure. So as you said, the program starts in January, and the beginning of the program is a classroom portion, and that runs from January through early May. And there are a series of topics that we cover, and each topic, the material is available online, although classes are intended in person, except for Litchfield, and I'll return to that in a minute. Mm-hmm. And each topic consists of 3 or 4 hours of online education that are to be completed, and then you come in to the class and hear a lecture. Classes meet once a week from 9 to 1, as I said, from January through early May.
Mm-hmm.
Following the classroom session, there are a couple of exams intended to make sure that you have retained and learned the various information.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've passed the exams, you move on to the outreach portion. And that consists of volunteer work, where in order to complete the internship and be certified as a master gardener, you need to complete 30 hours of outreach. That's working in various community-based projects, mm-hmm. like the ones I was talking about earlier, and 30 hours of office hours, which can either be in one of the extension offices or at various tabling events, like Earth Day fairs or farmers markets, where you're at a table and people can come up and ask you questions directly.
Mm.
So that's the basic rundown of the requirements.
Very good. And people can go to mastergardener.ucon.edu for all the details and application materials. Once again, the application deadline for classes beginning in January is in a couple weeks, Friday, October 17th. So please consult mastergardener.ucon.edu for backup and information. And of course, you can imagine a lot of resources are poured into making you a master gardener. So of course, there is a requisite for a tuition, so to speak, a program fee of $495. But I'm sure, Elizabeth, you have heard from many people that it was the best $500 they ever spent.
Oh, many people consider the program completely life-changing. Just the exposure to that environment and all of the knowledge gained and the experience of working with the community and helping people and doing outreach. I think many people think it's the best $500 they've ever spent.
And in closing, what's the latest way that you've been applying your expertise that you learned from becoming a master gardener around your own gardens that you started and became passionate about, so long ago?
I actually haven't had much time for my own garden this year. This is my first year as a coordinator, and I've really been immersed in that.
That's great. Well, I really appreciate the time this morning and sharing your experiences and promoting this important program that we've had the pleasure of having on the program many, many times over the years, Elizabeth Adler. She is the Hartford County Coordinator for the UConn Extension's Master Gardeners Program. Once again, a deadline to apply for the 2026 program is October 17th. The website to go to is mastergardener.ucon.edu. The UConn Extension Master Gardener Program is an educational outreach initiative, part of UConn Extension, and it's been around since 1978, making Connecticut a more beautiful and environmentally healthy place. Thank you so much, Elizabeth, for your time today.
Thank you, John. It was a real pleasure speaking with you.
You You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA for our program that's relevant to the audiences and communities we serve, you must make your request for consideration in writing via email to john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program can be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station websites. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Vocat. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime. Just find it under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.